Well, welcome to our segment two, and this is where we do our Bible study, as you just heard. So we are ready to open up our Bibles to 1 Samuel with our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Hiya, Amy. Well, last time we saw the death of Saul and of Jonathan and the end of the reign of King Saul. So today we're going to pick back up. We're actually going to start in 2 Samuel today in chapter 1. We're going to read verses 1 through 16. So if you have your Bibles open, go ahead and open up to 2 Samuel chapter 1. After the death of Saul, when David had returned from striking down the Amalekites, David remained 2 days in Ziklag. And on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. And when he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. David said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." And he answered, "The people fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." Then David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" And the young man who told him said, "By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me, and he called to me, and I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said to me, 'Stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers.' So I stood beside him, and I killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the armlet that was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my lord." Then David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David said to the young man who told him, "Where do you come from?" And he answered, "I am the son of a sojourner, an Amalekite." David said to him, "How is it that you were not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Then David called one of the young men and said, "Go, execute him." And he struck him down so that he died. And David said to him, "Your blood be on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" Saul is dead. David was off fighting the Amalekites to get his women and children back, and he doesn't know how the battle turned out. He gets back to Ziklag and has been there, resettling in for a couple of days when this man arrives. Now, this man has a story to tell, but first, we learn something very important about this guy. He was an Amalekite. He wasn't an Israelite. This guy is an enemy of God and his people. Even more than that, remember when Saul was told by God to go and destroy the Amalekites back in 1 Samuel chapter 15? But Saul didn't follow directions, and he left not only the king alive, but also the choice animals and other things. And Samuel comes to Saul when he'd done that and rebukes him, and Samuel ends up killing the king of the Amalekites. This guy, this Amalekite, isn't looking to help the Israelites. It is to get in the good graces of Israel's new king that this man comes. It's to elevate himself from his position, which could have been a foot soldier in the army of the Amalekites, or a scavenger of the dead, a man who went to battle, not to fight, but to steal stuff off the dead bodies, so he could sell those things. He wants to elevate himself from that position to someone of import in David's new reign. He saw an opportunity to promote himself, and as we see, he didn't mind lying to secure this new position that he envisioned himself having. He arrives outwardly showing honor to David. He tells David the story of the death of Saul and Jonathan, with a few of his own edits. David wants to have proof that they are dead, not just one man's words. So this man, who had to have been close enough to Saul to see and hear his interaction with his armor-bearer, now that's my supposition because he quotes Saul's words to the armor-bearer, only he casts himself in the role of armor-bearer, and he claims that he killed Saul. He claims that he does it out of mercy for Saul, putting him out of his misery and all that. that he was following Saul's command, fulfilling Saul's dying desire, that he was doing something honorable in killing Saul so the enemy couldn't abuse him. Then this guy took off Saul's crown and armband and brought them to David. Think about that. In order to come away with those, he had to have been nearby when Saul fell, and he was, most likely, the first one to reach Saul's body after he died to take those items. Now, I think the Amalekite knew, as soon as he told David his lie, that he might be in trouble. Why? Because David didn't throw a party at this news. David and his men mourned. They tore their clothes and wept and fasted the whole rest of the day. This Amalekite was shunted off to the side while David and his men grieved the loss of Saul. I can just imagine him as the day went on, watching the mourning and thinking, maybe this wasn't such a great idea. David is not excited that his enemy is dead. He mourns Saul and Jonathan and all the Israelites who died needlessly in this battle. When evening comes, David is ready to deal with the Amalekite. He calls the man to him and basically asks him, "What did you think you were doing?" The Amalekite has no answer for this. He was expecting praise, not condemnation, for claiming to have killed Saul. He didn't know much about David, obviously. After all, David could have killed Saul twice with his own hand, and he wouldn't do it because of reverence for God and for the man whom God had anointed. David shows no personal satisfaction or happiness that Saul is dead, and he sentences the man he thinks is responsible for Saul's murder to death. This man's lie costs him his life. It's interesting, though, that David has nothing to regret even when he learns the truth, which he doesn't learn today. Because David was finishing the job that Saul was supposed to do in utterly destroying the Amalekites. This Amalekite was living on borrowed time. David acted based on the information he had been given, which did prove to be a lie, but even so, he acted in a way to show that he understood what a big deal it was to kill Saul. If David refused to kill Saul and left it to God to deal with Saul, this man was horribly mistaken to think that David would rejoice at the murder that he'd supposedly committed. And if David refused to kill Saul, recognizing that Saul was God's anointed and should be revered, the man who boasts about murdering God's anointed deserves death. We'll see David's lament, his song, for Saul and Jonathan tomorrow, but for today, I marvel in how David handled this whole situation. Notice the order of events here. Upon receipt of the news, David and his men stop, and they mourn, not just for Saul, but for all of those who've been lost in battle. Then David re-asks this Amalekite who he is and what is his story. It is only then that David sentences this man to death for killing the Lord's anointed. And the Amalekite is such a good lesson for us on lying, isn't he? Consider this, whenever we lie, it's for our own agendas. We may see that we're lying to protect, we may say that we're lying to protect someone else, but unless you're in Nazi Germany, it's probably not the case. Think about it. You may say, "Well, I didn't want to hurt their feelings," when what you really mean is, "I didn't want to be the one to tell them, because I didn't want them to be upset with me." Lying is ultimately about achieving our own ends. Consider this Amalekite. He thought this was a slam dunk. He was sure that telling David about the death of his enemy would be viewed as good news to David. This man thought, Saul is David's enemy. Saul is dead. If I tell David I killed Saul, he'll be so grateful to me for ridding him of this enemy. He'll reward me. Sounds logical, right? But this man didn't know David. He didn't know what was really going on. He should have just stayed where he was, instead of drawing attention to himself, to what he was doing on the battlefield, robbing corpses, and telling a lie that got him killed. One thing that I tell my sons, and I try very hard to live up to, is that if they tell the truth when something happens, I'll be less angry and their punishment less severe than if they lie about it. I remember once when they were 2 and 3, and lying was still a very nebulous concept for them, my oldest came to me and said, "Mommy, I knocked the clock down." My first reaction was honestly a sigh, and then I said, "Thank you for telling me that you knocked the clock down. Let's go see." Then we determined how the clock fell, throwing balls at it, and he got a timeout for throwing the balls where they weren't supposed to go, And that was it. The clock was easily fixable, too. The battery had come out. That's it. But I thanked him a couple more times for coming to me when the clock fell down and told him that I wanted him to keep doing that, even if he thought he might get in trouble. I told him that not telling me would probably have ended in a spanking for him, but because he came to me, a timeout was all that was needed. Now, as they have gotten older, those things that they will not want to tell me are going to get bigger, and so my reaction. But I pray that God will help me to see, each and every time that they come to me and tell me the truth, that I need to be calm and that I need to handle it appropriately, even if my favorite dust catcher gets broken. After all, the truth is worth a dust catcher or two, right? What about you today? Is there something that you see an opportunity to be grabbed, even if it means lying to get it? And let's be honest, okay? You can call it fudging the truth or leaving out details, but you know a lie is a lie. Even if it means being deceitful and perhaps even intentionally causing grief for others by you grabbing this opportunity, is it worth it? We've discussed over the past lessons in Samuel that the truth is always the best option. We saw the consequences for David when he lied to the priest at Nob. This Amalekite was, first of all, doing something shameful and deceitful on the battlefield, and he carried that deceit and further and added to it, all added up to his death. So where are your lies and your scheming ways leading you?
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.